B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. This week, the PGA Tour returns to the mainland at the American Express Championship out in Palm Springs after 2 weeks in rain-soaked Hawaii. Those are three words you usually don't see associated with one another. Seriously, how bad was that weather? We'll discuss the crazy Hawaiian weather, the PGA Tour's new slow play policy, Brooks Koepka's injury revelation this week, and more with Ron and Ron. Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, and freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz. Also, I noticed on Coyote Joe's calendar last week when I was in there that one Colt Ford was recently in town. Now, in addition to being one of the most dynamic live performers of any musical genre, Colt was, for more than a decade, a professional golfer. We had the chance to talk about that. But let's get started with Ron Green Jr. Ron, let's start with Hawaii. I think Mother Nature really betrayed us and betrayed the PGA Tour. We're used to having crappy weather in Charlotte in January and February. We're used to watching playoff football games, and there's crappy weather on TV. I get that. That's the way it's supposed to be. But when we flip on the tournaments in Hawaii, we want to see sunshine, just light breezes, people hula dancing. We want ukulele music. I would argue that my weather in Monroe was better than the weather they had in Honolulu last Sunday.
I was out there for 10 days, 11 days, whatever. And it's great to be in Hawaii. It's great to be in Maui, great to be in Honolulu and all that. But if I had saved up for one lifetime, once-in-a-lifetime trip to Hawaii, that would have not have been the weather I wanted to get. I mean, it rained, I think, every day I was there, and the wind blew. I mean, it blew hard. I mean, it was 25 to 30 mile an hour sustained wind, and it was just, you know, it never stopped. And then, fortunately, I got out of Sony before it got too badly. I mean, that weekend, you would watch and look around there and, you know, see the standing water out there where they were trying to play around it. I mean, that's not what you expect for the Sony Open, but that's what they got.
Well, and and it's not like it was just isolated to one island in Hawaii either, because not only did it happen the week before on Maui at the Plantation Course, but our friend Doug Ferguson with the Associated Press tweeted out a photo from the week of the Sony, and he was standing in Kapalua, and I've never seen that much standing water on any fairway in my life, and the caption was, well, I think we're on the paths today. I mean, it was crazy. It never stopped.
No, it didn't stop. I mean, you know, listening to the news and everything out there, they were talking about, you know, a storm system out there. And, you know, it would come and go, and the sun would come out, and it'd be nice for a while. But then all of a sudden, you know, it's like those, whether in Maui or in Honolulu, those mountains right along where you are, and you'd see, like, the clouds sort of catching on top of the mountains, and all of a sudden, like, uh-oh, here comes one. And you could be somewhere, and in 5 minutes, like, you were in the wrong spot because it came down. But, you know, I mean, that's, you know, it's Mother Nature, and you know, it gave particularly the Sony a different feel to it. I mean, I got to play the Plantation course the day after in Maui in that 30 mile an hour wind, and it gave me even a greater appreciation for how good those guys are. And then, you know, you go to Sony, and you know they have to change the way they play a little bit or change their expectations. And maybe we're through the weather for a little while now.
The one thing that was really interesting to me was the last hour of the tournament, which is something we like to call the 18th hole of the tournament. And Ron, I get the TIO rule. I get the grandstands and all that. But in some ways, I think the spirit of the rule, I don't want to use the word violated, but it really, really helped Brendan Steele. You know, the spirit of the rule to me is if your ball is resting up against the grandstands or your ball landed in the grandstands, I get that. Brendan Steele's second shot on 18 was so horrendous. It was a full 100 yards from the grandstands, and he got by, and he did not fracture any rule. The rules were there, and it was done properly. But by basis of the rule, he actually got to drop to a position that he would have paid money to have been in. It was like 35 yards from the green with a wide open shot. I almost think that if you hit a shot as miserable as he did with that first one, you should be made to play that shot.
Well, now, to be fair to Brendan Steele, his ball did hit the top of that chalet and kick over there. It hit a structure that bounced it much farther left than where it would have been. Now, granted, it was a really bad shot. But, yeah, I know what you mean, but it's the nature of tournament golf and all those chalets and all those sorts of things that, you got to give them a path to the green. I suppose he could have chosen to hit it from there had he wanted to, but you certainly wouldn't. But,
oh, no.
Yeah, but you hear all the time, rules official and everything, use the rules to your advantage. Well, in that case, he got to use the rules to his advantage. Ultimately, wasn't enough for him. But I know, yeah, it was an odd circumstance there.
In the moment, of course, he was disappointed. I think it was Kurt Byron who was talking with him in the post-round interview. But when you look at what his last 2 years have been, I think if he had 30 minutes to think about it, Brendan Steele had to be happy with where he was on Sunday night as opposed to where he was the prior Monday morning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he's one of those guys who I don't think many of us had realized sort of where he had gone. I think he's a guy who you're familiar with, and he's won whatever four times, and occasionally he's up there in contention. You just know him to be a good, solid player and pretty steady, and you realize, well, he hadn't been very steady at all. And life changes have a lot to do with that. You could just tell in what he was saying how having a new young daughter, how much harder it became to leave home, and I think all of us can appreciate that. And then you go out there and you try to adjust to having the family on the road with you when you're playing. And he made some bad choices swing-wise with some, things he was working on and people he talked to. So he had to overcome that. But so that was a really big week for him. And, yeah, I think it sets him up so that he was worried about his playing status going forward. And I think he at least relieved himself of that pressure.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. I really wasn't all that familiar with Cam Smith until the President's Cup, and I really was impressed by him, speaking out, talking a game against Pat Reed, and then, waxing Justin Thomas in the singles in the President's Cup. That was impressive, but equally impressive was the way he bulldogged it around the last four or five holes at Wailea when Steele was leaking oil, and came away with a tremendous up and down on 18 for birdie, and then a great shot on the first playoff hole to ice the thing. That kid may be the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, talking to the guys who know him and have followed him through the years, they think he is. And he won 2017 or 18 in Zurich. He was with Jonas Blixt, and they teamed up to win together. And I remember the interview right afterwards. He was literally speechless, didn't quite know what to say. And but yeah, I think he's grown into it. I think in the same way, like for C.T. Pan or Abraham Answer, maybe Joaquin Neiman. I mean, the President's Cup helped raise his profile, and because he was right there sort of front and center. And he's a guy now we're much more familiar with. He's been in the top 50 or 60 in the world for 3 or 4 years now, and he does not have the immediate magnetism or star power of some other guys, but he's a guy who we know now, and we're going to get to know him a lot better, I think.
Ron, let's talk slow play on the PGA Tour. I had such high hopes that the PGA Tour would do something simple that made sense. My idea, I know you would reject, but this is the one I had. I wanted a guy dressed in black who resembled Clint Eastwood in his prime. And if he showed up on your hole, you knew that you were in trouble. And he would just tell you, you are on the clock. And if I even see you acting slow, we're going to penalize you a stroke. And by the way, I don't like anybody on the PGA Tour, so don't say I'm playing favorites. And I think that would have been a simple way to handle it. And basically, you could have just picked on J.B. Holmes for a couple of weeks, and we could have gotten this whole thing solved. I have read the new policy two or three times, and I'm still not altogether sure how it's going to work in proper in practical application. Are you sure?
Well, I think it's going to have to play out. You just know you don't want to be on the observation list. Then you're starting to get into trouble. I think, Jay Monahan, when we sat down with him in Maui this year and we were talking about it before they officially unveiled it, he said our goal is to not make tournament rounds faster that much. He said, you know, they average 4 hours and 43 minutes on Thursdays and Fridays and threesomes. They average 3 hours and 52 minutes on a weekend in terms of how long it takes to play. And it has been almost exactly the same for 30 years. They've got all the numbers and times and all that. So it's just the you get the situations where, you know, you see Bryson DeChambeau take 2.5 minutes or whatever to hit a pitch shot. I think what I like about it is the fact that they're focusing on individuals, which they didn't really have a policy to do in previous iterations of it. And I think I don't think we're going to see just a glut of penalties and all that, but I think it is there. I think one of the small and sort of subtle things that will matter is if you get two bad times, it's not in a round now, but over the course of a tournament, then the penalties kick in. So just, you know, if you take too much time on Thursday and then think, okay, I'm free and clear, well, then it happens again on Saturday, now you get dinged. And, you know, I was talking to James Hahn, who was on the Players Advisory Council and involved in this. He said, this player's going to need to be in touch. The slow players need to be in touch with their bankers and account managers because it's going to start costing them money, and they have, you know, put some meat to that. I think they have raised the threat of putting one-stroke penalties. Is it going to be everything everybody wants? Probably not. But I think, again, I don't know that the players think pace of play is as big an issue as those of us outside sometimes think it is.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. One thing that the PGA Tour continues to do, which makes me nuts, is their lack of transparency on major issues. Already, their drug policy is for them to know and you to find out later. And I think there's no reason why you couldn't publish this observation list. But it is going to remain out of the public view unless we can get a player or two to squeal, because they're going to have access to it. Why the subterfuge? Why the continual lack of transparency from the PGA Tour just for the sake of doing it?
I think the players didn't want it out there either. I think they will know. I think they just decided, in keeping with what they, you know, with the exception of performance-enhancing drugs, where they will make public any violations or violators there, I think they wanted to keep we keep it in-house. There's going to be a time, and who was it last year? I mean, Eduardo Molinari tweeted out something about who was on sort of the European list. I think it will get out. I think most of us can probably name it right now, name some of the guys who were on there. I'm not surprised that they keep it private. That's their nature. And again, you know, Jay Monahan is the commissioner, but he works for the players and he works for the sponsors. And I think that's the way they're comfortable now. Maybe it will, you know, maybe they will find out it's a better deterrent or a better enforcer if they make it public down the road. I think when they roll it out at Hilton Head, it's interesting, they're going to roll it out, put it actually into effect at Hilton Head, which is where they play, barring really severe winds, they play some of the fastest rounds of golf all year.
No kidding. In terms of transparency, there's something else that crossed my mind this week. Brooks Koepka's press conference, where he was detailing just how bad his knee injury was, really got me to thinking. We knew Brooks had injured his knee. We knew that he had re-injured his knee. We did not know the severity of it. And furthermore, we didn't know how long he was playing on a knee that was bad and how bad that knee was hurt. Now, let's just sort of table that for a second, because I respect everyone's right to privacy in terms of their medical condition and all that. I get it. However, the PGA Tour has openly said that they are going to start courting gambling. There is going to be wagering on all sorts of things on the PGA Tour, really within the next 2 years. And here's what I know about gambling and professional sports, and even amateur sports. There's a reason why there's an injury report in college football, why there is an injury list in professional football, baseball, hockey, basketball. It's for one reason and one reason only, and that's gambling. The PGA Tour at some point is going to have to come to terms with, if we are going to embrace this gambling, we're going to have to be a little more transparent, and our players are going to have to be a little more transparent with what injuries they're playing with and how severe they are. To say my knee is sore is one thing. But to not know if you're teeing it up with a torn meniscus, that's a whole other if you're gambling. Am I way out of bounds on this?
That's why they call it gambling.
So you don't think the PGA Tour is going to have to be more transparent with their injuries?
I'm sure they will be every bit as transparent as Bill Belichick is with his injuries.
Well, I tried to get him to go out on the conspiracy limb with me. He's not going to bite. That's Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. And when we return, now a dynamic country music performer, once for more than a decade, a professional golfer. Colt Ford takes dead aim at his previous life, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are taking dead aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I was in Coyote Joe's last weekend and noticed on the calendar that one Colt Ford had been in town right after the new year. Now, you may know Colt is one of the most amazing performers of any musical genre going on the road right now. But for more than a decade, Colt Ford was a professional golfer. Okay, let's go back in time a little bit. Before there was Colt Ford the musician, there was Jason Ferris Brown from Athens, Georgia, who loved the game of golf. How did you get introduced to the game, and when did you start playing?
My dad introduced me to it when I was young. I'm at 5 or 6 years old hitting balls, and then I just excelled at it, you know, really early. I was scratched by the time I was about 13 years old. My dad did a lot of coaching American Legion baseball, and he played professional baseball a bit, so baseball I loved too. I had scholarships in golf and baseball, and I played everything in high school, basketball, I mean, so football, I played it all. But I just, you know, in golf, was the one thing that drew it to me the most was I couldn't lose because somebody else messed up. I mean, it was all on me. Like, there's nobody else to blame. It was, you know, I could, you know, in baseball, I could throw a one hitter and somebody could make one error and we can lose 1-0, you know, and it's like, man, I just couldn't stand that. So I chose golf and I was able to do it for a living for a long time. And it's a great game, and I think people, you know, it's with some of the stuff that's going on now with Top Golf and things like that, it's introducing some people to the game that may not have been part of it before, and it's cool. It's cool to watch it go and still go play in some of these celebrity events and still compete a little bit. It's fun.
You know, it's funny that you bring up, and I was just sort of taken aback just now because what you said was almost verbatim what I remember my son saying when he was like 10 or 11 years old, and he told me he didn't want to play baseball and he didn't want to play basketball anymore. And I said, well, why not? And he looked at me and he said, because I don't want my winning or losing to be in anybody else's hands but mine. And he was 10 or 11 years old when he said that. And when you just, and I was taken aback. I wonder how many people in the game of golf got into it that way, that was their outlet of, look, it's me, and that's it.
Maybe, I mean, you know, maybe some have been down that road. I think the thing we're seeing today with kids is they're focused on one sport so early. And I quite honestly, I'm just not a huge fan of that. You know, and I dealt with it with my son with the travel baseball, and all of a sudden it turned into a year-long thing. And I don't know that it's not hurting kids more than it's helping them, to be quite honest with you. You need to play other sports. You need to do other activities and not just one thing all the time, all year long. I just, you know, you're going to have your chance to do that when you're an adult, when you got to get up and go to work every day.
So. Oh, no, Colt, I completely agree with you. You know, you and I grew up in the same era. In the fall, you played soccer, football, and then you played basketball in the winter, and then you played baseball in the spring, and baseball season usually ended right around the time the school let out, and then we had this thing called summer vacation where you just
right.
were a kid.
Right.
And that
yeah.
those days are gone with the wind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying all those programs are bad, and for some kids it's probably really good. But I do think as a whole, we're getting carried away with the travel baseball and soccer and you know, to just too much of one sport all the time. I just don't think that's good for any young kid. Let them play a bunch of different things. You know, maybe you're good at this one, you're okay at that one, maybe you're not so good at the other one. But I mean, it builds character. And I'm not a everybody gets a trophy kind of guy or dad. I mean, I don't think you're doing a kid any favors by saying, you know, hey, you win when you lose. I mean, when you're real little, that's fine. But as you get older, that does not prepare you for life. That's not how it works. I mean, nobody gives you, when you go to work and you don't do good, nobody comes in there and goes, that's all right, still gives you a paycheck. You might get fired. So I think we need to, you know, there's nothing wrong with learning to lose and lose gracefully and figuring out which way is the best way for you to be successful and go do that.
Musician and entertainer Colt Ford is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's get back to golf for a second. When you walk on a stage, you know I'm the baddest mother trucker on the planet tonight, and y'all better get ready. You have to have that mindset. Athletics at the highest levels, not that much different. When was the first time that you walked on a driving range and you knew you were the best one out there?
Well, there's no question. I mean, I worked for Dr. Rotella, Bob Rotella, sports psychologist, for early 20s when I turned pro in golf, and you have to think that way. There's nothing wrong with being cocky. Just don't be a jerk. I mean, you have to be confident. You have to think when you step up there that I can beat everybody here. And if you don't think that most of the guys that are successful in any sport or any business or anything, that's how they think. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be a jerk and be ugly to people, but you have to think that you're the best there and you can beat anybody. And when I was, you know, when I got up to 14, 15 years old, 16, I mean, I thought I could beat anybody. I mean, that don't mean you do it all the time, but you at least need to feel that way when you step up there.
Did you play golf in college?
I did, yeah, I did.
Where did you go to school?
University of Georgia.
That's not a shabby golf program by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I mean, I was a college All-American, and, and I've won probably a dozen or so professional golf tournaments around the world, and, I used to play pretty good.
Oh, God.
Again, you're just kind of, you're a couple swings away or a putt away from, playing for $1 million every first prize or not that much, but it's a fun game. It's a great game. It allows people to get involved in a lot of different businesses. There's a lot of things done with the game of golf that you can't do with other sports, and you can also play it, long into your life versus other sports. So it's a very neat game and special to me.
Let's talk about your professional career. You were on the Nationwide Tour, what is now the Web.com Tour. You talk about a tour that we've seen progress from the Hogan Tour to the Nike Tour to the Nationwide Tour, and now the Web.com. Guys on the Web.com can actually make a living now.
No question. When I started playing, actually, with the Hogan Tour, when I first and I meant like any mini tour golf. I mean, if you broke even, you were really playing you were golfing your ball. I mean, it just wasn't the money. I mean, and now, again, like on the mini tours, you can hardly make a living. And, I mean, now you can. I mean, now guys can actually stay out there on the web, get some experience, and actually make a living and put some money in their pocket. And, it was way harder when I was playing, way different. But the players are all still just as good. I mean, they're coming out younger, better. They're a little less afraid. There's nobody scared. These kids come out now, they can beat anybody at any age. There's, it used to be you get out and you get on tour and it takes you a few years and you learn where to stay and you learn where to eat. You learn where to, travel and all that stuff. And then you start, maybe you win. And now guys come out there and like, yeah, I can win the first time I tee it up. And they're not afraid. It's pretty amazing.
Colt, do you think at the end of the day that may be Tiger Woods' lasting legacy to the game of golf? All these guys who are out now, they had him on their wall, and they saw how he did it, and that he came out absolutely fearless at 20 or 21 and said, hello, world, and here I come and get you. And that's the way all these guys are now. These guys coming out of college, they're ready to win and ready to win now.
No question. It really is incredible how mature they are at a young age now with their playing abilities. The guys used to be intimidated, and quite honestly, on tour, I met some guys that were great players and great friends of mine. They may never admit it, but there was a time when Tiger Woods stepped on the tee that they knew that everybody knew that you could not beat him, and they were a little bit intimidated and afraid. And that doesn't, I don't think you have that anymore about any guy in particular anymore. I don't know that we'll ever see that again. With somebody like that, although you may see it again with him, there's still that aura about him, like, oh wow, that's Tiger Woods. I mean, but so it's good to see him. What we saw in Atlanta with him at the Tour Championship and him playing good again—that's only good for the game.
Absolutely, Colt Ford, musician and entertainer, is our guest taking Dead Aim. You were on the mini tours for about 10 years or so. At what point did you say, I can't do it anymore? Or was there an injury, or was there something that happened, or did you just say, I just don't know if I'm going to make it?
Well, again, you know, there's always that belief, like, just, you know, again, you're one, when I was playing, you could get, you could qualify in school and get your tour card. Now you have to go through the web tour to get it, which I think is probably a good way to do it. But, you know, it's just, you just get frustrated. You miss putt here and there. You know, it just, I don't know that I ever thought that I couldn't make it. I just got to a point where it was like, I did have some injuries, and I had a couple things go wrong, and it's just expensive to be out there. And I didn't have, you know, my parents could only afford what they could afford. And then it got to a point where I needed some other sponsorship money from, you know, you have to get a group of guys together, and I was able to get a little bit of money, but not enough to really keep going. So at some point, you just have to go, hey, I got a family to raise, and I got to figure out a way to get a steady paycheck. So that's, you know, sometimes life just gets in the way, and you got to make the decisions based on what's best for your family, and that's what I did.
Now, Colt, I realize that many times you and Brad Pitt are mistaken for one another, and that you have
that's why I wear the cowboy hat,
and that you have this amazing visage of a male model and cover model for GQ.
Right.
That being said, I have always thought that with the way you look and the way that you golf your ball, there's no telling how much money hustling golf you could have made. Did you? Let's come clean now. Did you ever do just a little bit of hustling?
I still do just a little bit of hustling. you can't help it sometimes. Some people just, you know, it's cost some people quite a bit of money to find that out. But I mean, a lot of times it's their own fault, you know. I mean, it's not my fault you didn't do the research. You know? You asked, did I want to play? And I said, sure, you can stand on your head. We'll play for whatever falls out. You know, I mean, like, so I'm lucky to be able to put a few dollars in my pocket because of that. Yeah. I normally only get one shot at it.
Yeah, right? That's it. Cool.
I've had a couple of my buddies are like, I'm going to bring you here. But, you know, we're bringing you in a 10 handicap. I was like, are you friends with these guys? Because you may not be at the end of this round. You know, so it's fun. Golf's a great game. And, it's a game where I'm friends with a lot of different athletes. You know, I played golf with Ray Allen last Sunday in the celebrity event. It's like, I can't go out and have a fun game of one-on-one with Ray Allen. That's,
yeah.
I mean, it might be fun for him, but it won't be fun for me. So golf is one of those sports where, because of the handicaps, it allows people of all different skill levels and everything to play. And, you know, if you can't play 18, you don't have time, go out and play 9 or go to the Top Golf driving range. Let the kids just hit balls, let them have fun, and see if they pick up the game.
Well, I'm also a big fan of short courses that are being built. The Pinehurst, one that they've done in the past couple of years, the Cradle, I'm telling you, at 780 yards, it's the most fun you will ever have. And people who have never picked up a club before could have fun doing it. I think that's a future for golf, too.
Well, I do. I agree with that a lot. You know, I mean, again, finding ways to get out there and play, just play some holes, be outside. You know, enjoy, I mean, golf course scenery. I mean, I got the AT&T Pebble Beach coming up in a few weeks, and you go, I don't care if you've never played golf at all or anything. If you walk one foot on Pebble Beach and don't realize how special that place is, I mean, you don't have to have played at all to enjoy that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's, you know, I'm trying to do all I can to help try to continue to grow the game. We just did the event with the LPGA players. Anything I can help. I've been talking to Golf Channel about doing some announcing, which would be fun. And, you know, I love the game, and I want to continue to play and as well as I can for as long as I can.
Colt Ford is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk about those two pro-ams that you mentioned. You were down in Florida for the LPGA's Tournament of Champions, the Diamond Resorts Tournament. I didn't realize you played with Ray Allen. I saw some video of him on the range. For a tall guy, how silky smooth is that guy's swing?
It really is good. I mean, it really, Ray can really play. He takes the game seriously, but he doesn't get bent out of shape about it. But he's a very, very good player, plays a lot. You know, and it's tough on taller guys. But, you know, a lot of the athletes are very big guys. Smoltz won, and Mark Mulder, a lot of the pitchers and stuff, they're just so big, and they hit it so far. There's half a dozen guys that I play celebrity golf with that hit it further than everybody on the PGA Tour. I mean, that, I mean, you can't believe. I mean, you throw in guys out there that are 6'5", and now they have a good golf swing, and they can swing at 125, 30 miles an hour. That's, I just can't do that. I have to, you know, beat them by not making big mistakes.
Cole Ford is our guest taking Dead Aim. So let's talk real quick, and I'll get you out of here on this, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. This is the holy grail of Pro-Ams to go play in. How many times have you done it?
This will be my fifth or sixth, I'm trying to remember, year. And it's absolutely everything they say it is. It's just a phenomenal event. It's ran unbelievably. I mean, Steve John, who runs it, is just phenomenal the way they treat you. I meant, in being inside the ropes with the best players in the world and some, you know, incredible celebrities and athletes and, you know, and the fans, they have 2,500 volunteers that make that thing go. So it is a huge honor and a big deal to be a part of it.
Who do you play with?
You know, I've moved it around. I've played with a couple of Georgia boys. I mean, Chris Kirk, who played golf at Georgia that I used to help some in college. And I play with Scott Brown, who's an Aiken, you know, South Carolina guy. I played, good Lord, who else have I played with? I played with Brian Gay, who's also a Diamond Resort ambassador like me. We grew up playing junior golf together. And last year we finished 9th or 10th, and he finished like 8th in the tournament, and played with Billy Horschel, which is odd. Brian and Billy both.
I was going to say, Georgia and Florida, y'all are able to coexist?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Man, why did I play with two Gators? But they're good guys and good friends of mine, and I think I'm going to be back with the Bulldogs this year, so it looks like it'll be fun.
All right, so I don't know if it's Tuesday night or Wednesday night that is that big party. I've talked with Jake Owen about this, where all of a sudden you look to your left or to your right and you're like, holy crap, that's Clint Eastwood. What is that moment for you that you've had at that party where you look to your right or your left and said, oh my gosh?
Yeah, it's that was my dad's guy. So, he, you know, as a kid, that was my dad's guy, that's my guy. So I remember meeting him the first time. Very few times have I been completely awestruck and without a question. Being with Clint was one of those times. I mean, and I got to play with him as his partner in the Celebrity Shootout a couple of years ago, and it's just, yeah, he's the guy's iconic. You know, he's iconic. And, again, you stand up on a stage and you start realizing, like, you know, that, I mean, I don't, you don't have to like Kenny G, or maybe you don't like the horn music or whatever, but the guy sold 100 million records, you know. I mean, and there's Huey Lewis, and there's just all these unbelievable artists and people there, and it's just – you know, it kind of blows your mind at times to realize that. But I try to spend every second I can, every volunteer I see, I try to tell them thank you and I appreciate what you do. None of that stuff works without them. And I'm just humbled and lucky to be a part of it. I don't know what else to say. It may sound a little corny, but that's just the way I feel about all of it.
Is there an extra lump in your throat when you've got a putt after Clint Eastwood has given you that look of Dirty Harry like you better not miss?
Oh, man. And the little shootout thing is an alternate shot deal. So just a little funny story. Nick Faldo, Sir Nick Faldo, I guess, was caddying for Clint when he was my partner. My fiddle player, Justin, who is from, you know, rural Missouri, was caddying for me. And at one point, Clint asked Nick to hold his beer, and Nick kind of made a big deal about it. And my caddy, I can't tell exactly what he said. He was like, "Being right, come on, you got to be kidding me! It's Clint Eastwood. Hold the freaking beer!" I was like, "Easy, Justin. Don't get us kicked out of here." But in his mind, he was like, "What do you mean, Nick Faldo? You hold the beer. Shut up. It's Clint Eastwood." I mean, Sir Nick Faldo does not trump Clint Eastwood. I'm sorry, not here in America. Anyway.
Not a nicer guy, better performer, and one hell of a golfer. It's the one and only Colt Ford. And up next, freelance journalist Ron Mintz takes Dead Aim at Hawaiian weather, slow play policies, Brooks Koepka's injury revelation, and more. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ron Mintz is a respected freelance golf journalist and a must-follow for golf fans on Twitter, at Mintz Golf. That's at MintzGolf. Ron, first off, happy New Year, and let's start with the first, what I consider, real tournament of the new year. Not Kapalua, but the Sony at Wailea this last weekend. It's one thing for us to be miserable with weather, especially here in Charlotte, where it feels like it's been nothing but nasty rain forever. It's one thing for us to be watching football where it's frigid and cold and perhaps snowing. We're used to that. We deal with that. But what we like to do is escape by cutting on the golf in Hawaii and seeing beautiful tropical locales and people hula dancing and ukuleles playing. And you know what? As crappy as our weather was in Charlotte, I'd have taken it over what they were having in Honolulu last weekend.
It was hard to watch. I almost felt like I was there, and it would come and go, you know, and it was raining sideways with the heavy winds. And I knew it was going to take somebody that really had patience to win that tournament because, personally, I don't like playing in bad weather, and sometimes you just want to hit your shot and get back under the umbrella. But some guys love it. Some of them thrive on it, like Rory McIlroy and some other players on the European tour, but you had to have a lot of patience last week.
And that's why I was thinking going into the last round, I don't care who's in front of him. If I'm going to bet on anybody, it's going to be Kisner. That guy's a bulldog. He just couldn't make a putt on Sunday, and he made everything on Saturday. The last hour of that tournament was basically the 18th hole on that tournament with all that you had going on, people hitting shots out of bounds, going back, having to hit shots over again. And then I want to talk with you about this rule. And I get the temporary immovable obstruction rule. I get it. And I get when it comes into play, if your ball is up against it, I understand that. But if you're Brendan Steele and you have hit a shot that's so terrible that it is 50 to 100 yards to the left of the temporary immovable obstruction, I think you should have to play that awful shot that you created rather than he actually got a break. He got to take a drop because the TIO right to an open area about, you know, 25, 30 yards from the green.
Yeah, I was shocked. I guess they cut to someone else, but I know exactly where the ball landed, and I thought, man, he's in the other fairway. And I knew they would give him relief because of the man-made structure there, the bleachers or whatever. But when they came back to him, like you say, he was almost in the fringe.
Yeah,
and I thought, how did he get a drop that far? I didn't think you could advance it closer. I thought you could move it, you know, left or right. But evidently, that was the only way he could get any relief.
I mean,
he got a big break. Oh, he just didn't capitalize.
Huge, huge, huge break. So Kisner couldn't make a putt, so he was out. And Steele is leaking oil huge on the 17th and 18th. And in a way, I got to tell you, I feel sorry for him. He hit a really good drive after bogeying the 17th, hit a really good drive on the 18th, but then had to wait almost 20 minutes with all that tournament on the line to hit his second shot. You know, he hit a terrible shot, one that you and I could have hit. But, you know, still, I felt sorry for him having to wait like that. But even still, I didn't think Cameron Smith had it in him to close the deal like that. That kid in the President's Cup and now here has really shown me something.
Yeah, he's got nerves of steel for a young kid, and he, you know, everybody's really high on him. He had to like it wasn't a big deal. He said, you know, I just grinded it out and I was patient, and that's how he was able to hang on. Brendan, you know, he had missed 14 cuts in a row, and I don't know if it was right before this tournament, but he had end of last year and this year, and he said, you know, he didn't know if he was even going to keep his card. So I think he was actually not happy with second place, but it was a good tournament for him.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because when and I forget who maybe Kurt Byram, who was conducting the post-round interview, and in the moment, of course, Steele was crushed. Of course, he was disappointed. And all I could think is, like you, man, put this in perspective for a second. Think of where you were a week ago or on Monday before this tournament and think about where you are now. You got to feel good about this.
Yeah, I mean, he's really popular with other players. And they said he never complains about anything. And I think the guys were really rooting for him. But financially, he still had a good week. So that's it ended good for both of them.
Freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. Moving right along, a couple of announcements this week. Let's start with the slow play announcement on the PGA Tour, what they're planning on doing. I've read it a couple of times. Is it just me, or does the PGA Tour seem to find ways to complicate things and get out? Just look, walk up to J.B. Holmes and say, speed it up or you're being penalized. Walk up to somebody and say, speed it up or you're being penalized. This whole, we're going to monitor your progress over 10 tournaments, and then the first one to do this is going to get fined. Who's keeping up with all this information?
Well, it's like Paul Casey said. He said it's been a problem in golf since he started playing, and it's all they talk about every week. And so he was in the meeting where they announced the changes. I think he's on the Players Council. And he said, but I was there, and I heard it all, and I still, to be honest with you, don't understand it, but I'm glad they're doing something about it. And they've had it, but, you know, I looked at something, Charlie, I don't know if you're aware of this. The last player penalized for slow play on the PGA Tour was in 1995. Glenn Day, and his nickname is All Day, was penalized at the Honda. Now, the Masters penalized, you remember when they penalized the little amateur 14-year-old Guan?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember his name, but yeah.
In 2013, and that just made me furious. I mean, to take an amateur to make an example out of. But the last player on the PGA Tour was back in 1995, and so I think this time they're actually going to hand out some penalties. But you're right, it is confusion. And now we've got this observation list. Have you heard about that?
I don't understand it. Like I said, all of this is just so convoluted. It just seems to me, hire a guy to dress in black so that everybody knows that he is the evil overlord and he doesn't like any of you, okay? And his job is to go to every guy who's notoriously slow on the PGA Tour and follow them for a couple of holes and say, you know what, Jack, you got to speed it up. And if you don't, I'm going to penalize you because I'm the evil slow play overlord and I hate all of you. That would work. That would be effective and efficient, and everyone would understand. If the man in black shows up on your hole, then you're in trouble. Not this whole watch list we're going to monitor for 10 tournaments. I mean, my God, it's incredible. We've created, golf once again has created a bureaucracy within itself to get in its own way.
Well, if you go to the USGA site and look at their rules, how they've got explained, it's only about two paragraphs, but they refer to local organizations like a club or, in this case, the PGA Tour, and they leave it up to them to take the rules and expand them. But one thing they're encouraging, and I don't know if the PGA Tour is to play out of turn. If a guy's ready to go and the other two players don't mind, let him go ahead and hit.
That is being encouraged. That is being encouraged. My son is an amateur, and that is being encouraged in all of his tournaments these days. They have
Yes,
it is a big ready golf situation, and I think it's. I can tell you this. I have seen his rounds played in horrific weather, rainy weather, threesomes take just at 4 hours to complete, and they're walking.
Yeah.
And that, to me, I don't know how many tournaments you've been around, but that's moving in a tournament. And that's the average these days. So if the PGA Tour will just take their cues from what's going on with these amateurs in the USGA, they'll be much better off.
Well, the USGA this time, I think, has got it right. But, again, they are vague about some stuff, and they're leaving it up to the tours. But the European Tour is doing something a little bit different, and I like it much better than what the PGA Tour is doing. But back to the observation list. They're using shot link data to identify the slower players, the slowest 10%. And they'll be on a list that changes each week. But you'll stay on it 10 weeks, and then you'll drop off if you improve. They're not going to make this list public. And that really bothers me. That's sort of like the drug testing program. You never know who's failed and who hasn't. The players are going to know who's on the list, but we won't unless the players tell us. And so it's not going to be made public. And so they're going to watch that player. And the one thing I do like about it, they're not going to penalize a group anymore. Now, currently, they'll go up to a group
right,
and say, you know,
right.
y'all are on the clock. They're just going to go up to that individual player. And if he's taken more than 40 seconds, they hit a shot, they're going to warn him, and then they'll give him a one-stroke penalty. And I'm confused about this. At first, it was going to be twice in the same tournament. Now I think it's twice in a round, but vice versa. But the thing I do like is they're not going to penalize an entire group. So if you got like, well, they had a list of players they thought would be on the list: Jason Day, DeChambeau, J.B. Holmes, Jason Day, Ben Crane, those types.
Yeah.
They'll just go to them and not – they may tell their playing partners, but they're not going to warn them. So I like that part. But do you know what they're doing at Abu Dhabi this week? They're actually going to have that penalty that's not just a trial. But on each tee, they'll have a electronic display on the tee telling the group where they stand, if they're ahead or behind. I think that's a great idea because – a lot of times the guys get caught up in playing and trying to win, and they don't know. So they're going to have it on each tee saying you're ahead or you should be, you know, you're 2 minutes off the clock or whatever. So I think that's a great idea.
I'd love to see that. Freelance journalist Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. You lead me into a conversation about transparency in a whole different realm. I want to talk about Brooks Koepka.
Yeah.
Brooks Koepka had an injured knee. And then he re-injured the knee, and that's all we heard. And I get that someone has the right to privacy regarding their medical situation. I get that. But here's where the conflict is going to come into play. No sport is embracing gambling like the PGA Tour is starting to embrace gambling. Within the next year, you're going to be able to bet on all sorts of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Put that aside for 1 second. There is one reason and one reason only why there is an injured list and an injury report for college and pro football. And that is for gambling. People can say all they want and make up other reasons, but that is the reason. If you are going to embrace gambling as a sport, professional golf, don't you and aren't you going to be obligated to be much more transparent in terms of people's injuries and how severe they are?
You got a great point, and I think Tiger is a perfect example. Now Brooks, I mean, how many times did Tiger, and I sat in a media center, and we've seen him hobble in, and we'd ask him, "How is it your back?" And he'd say, "No, I just got a hip pointer."
Yeah.
And one tournament specifically where he told us that, 2 weeks later he had back surgery. I mean, we knew it wasn't a hip pointer, but he wasn't as open and candid as he is now. So you really never really knew about Tiger. And Brooks, when he said he slipped at the, CJ Cup?
Right.
I mean, Charlie, you and I have been playing golf a long time. You slip all over the golf course. That's why we used to wear steel cleats, but... you can't play golf if just sliding a little bit here on some wet grass or, in his case, cart path, is going to make your knee fall out.
I totally.
And he's admitted in the presser that it was worse. It sounds much worse than what we thought. He said sometimes he'd bend over and the knee would just give away, and he couldn't stand up.
Exactly. And if you are going, again, this takes you back to my point, if you are going as a sport to embrace the gambling culture as golf is trying and attempting to embrace the gambling culture, Brooks Koepka is going to be required or should be required to be completely transparent and forthcoming as to his physical situation, because betting on somebody like Brooks Koepka is going to affect things.
Yeah, another thing that I just thought about, since you mentioned the gambling, every week I follow the field because it changes so much from Monday to Thursday. A lot of guys will draw and then alternates will pop in. And people ask me, well, why did he withdraw? And most of the times they don't give you a reason. Sometimes they'll say, if it's in the middle of the tournament, they'll tell you it was a back injury. Well, I don't think you have to give the tour a reason if you decide to pull out of a tournament on Wednesday. We had one that showed up this morning that withdrew before they teed off, and just so happens an alternate was there and replaced him. But that'll be something they'll have to change, too, because if you got people betting earlier in the week and he withdraws,
oh, well, they'll just Vegas just null and voids it. That bet is canceled. Yeah. Everybody gets their money back. There's no big deal. My problem would be if somebody like Brooks says, I slipped and I hurt my knee, and he's taping it up and playing the next week. If we are just led to believe, he just, you know, tweaked it a little bit. That's one thing. If he's playing with a torn meniscus, that changes the way you gamble. And, I just think there's going to have to be some more transparency that the golfers aren't going to want to do, but I think they're going to have to embrace. Get you out of here on this. Freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz, our guest taking Dead Aim. This week, it's the American Express, whatever it is. To me, it will always be the Bob Hope Desert Classic, although it's not the Hope anymore. I was explaining to my son today, and I felt like, you know, that old man sitting on his lawn in Birkenstocks and brown socks yelling at kids to get off of it. But you and I both remember when the Hope was a five-day tournament. It was a 90-hole event, and it was a celebrity pro-am that was every bit as star-studded as the Clam Bake up at Crosby, the Pebble Beach pro-am. It was a big, big deal on the PGA Tour.
Oh, well, I used to love it. I love seeing the celebrities play with the pros. And you're right. It was a who's who in Hollywood and everywhere else.
And politics. You remember you would have a threesome that would be Bob Hope, Gerald Ford, and Arnold Palmer. And that would be your celebrity pairing for 2 days that you got to watch on TV. And you're thinking to yourself, when do you ever get to see this?
No. I mean, Bob Hope's made so many jokes about Gerald Ford. He made a living out of it because Gerald Ford used to hit people in the gown.
Oh, he was a horrid golfer. Horrid.
Yeah, he was. No, you're right. I think the AT&T's lost some luster, too. You don't really see the strength of field there like you used to. It's better than what we got this week, but it's dropped off some.
Yeah, I think money has changed everything. You can make so much money out there on tour that there's not the impetus to play tournaments that you ordinarily wouldn't, and I think you're right. I think, in fact, I know in Tiger's case, barring him losing a bet, there's no way in hell that he is playing the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am ever again. He does not like playing with his back in that weather, those huge six-hour rounds.
Yeah, and you're right. These new generation of players, they don't particularly like playing with amateurs. I mean, they're out there trying to make a living. And it takes a special person to be patient with three amateurs, you know, with 15, 20 handicaps. But that's just part of the gig. If you want to play in that tournament, that's the way it is. But a lot of players don't want to do that anymore.
Always nice to check in with freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz. I'd also like to thank country music star and former pro golfer Colt Ford and Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for their time and insight this week. Hey, reminder, you just catching the last little bit of the show, wonder what all we've covered today? No worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BPod Studios, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there now, links to articles on the latest goings on in and around the game. Weather-wise, we may have to dodge some water here and there, and it's a little chilly at times, but still plenty of opportunity in the Carolinas this weekend for teeing it up and letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.